copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 243 regarding a missing person. Cooperate with the district attorney's investigator. That's all. Rosenquist.
Friends, the same big red and white tank trucks you see unloading at the police and fire department garages in your city also supply the Rio Grande station in your neighborhood with the identical police car performance gasoline that powers the cars of your public servants. When I have pointed out that more of these emergency cars are powered by Rio Grande cracked wherever it is sold than any other brand, I have rather taken it for granted that everyone understood there was and is only one Rio Grande cracked gasoline, not a special grade for official cars and another for the public. However, a few inquiries of late lead me to believe that this fact cannot be emphasized too strongly, that you motorists who tank up at your nearest Rio Grande station do get the benefits of the very same Rio Grande cracked that now powers not only the police cars and fire engines in many of your cities and counties, but is the motor fuel preferred by an overwhelming number of California state and federal government officials to drive their public-serving automotive equipment. Yes, friends, you get the same quicker starting, speedier pickup, longer mileage, top power and speed that has caused officials to call it the police car performance gasoline and make Rio Grande cracked the most highly recommended public-serving gasoline in the West. The story we are to hear tonight has been taken from the confidential records on file in the District Attorney's Office of Los Angeles County. We have therefore asked District Attorney Buren Fitz to open our program. Mr. Fitz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This story is one in which there was no apparent crime. There was absolutely nothing to indicate to investigating officers that a crime had been committed. Nevertheless, there developed one of the most cleverly planned crimes that it has been my experience to encounter. But like all criminals, the perpetrator of this deed miscalculated just enough to upset his own plans. But how he did this has been reserved for the end of the program.
In April 1925, Captain James Bean, head of the Los Angeles Homicide Squad, looked up from his desk to greet a visitor.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I need your help.
All right, that's what we're here for. What seems to be the trouble?
I'm Dr. Young.
Yes?
I want you to help me find my wife.
Oh, go on.
She's disappeared, and I can't locate her anywhere. Frankly, I'm not worried much about it because, well, she's been writing to me quite regularly.
Then why are you coming to the police?
Well, her father has been making statements that I know where she is.
Well, do you?
No, I don't. He's even gone so far as to insinuate that I've killed her. And, well, I want you to help me find her.
Well, this doesn't quite make sense. You say your wife has been writing to you, and yet you don't know where she is.
Well, that's true. She has written me several letters, but she never gives any street address.
Just who is your wife's father?
Old man F.H. Lunt.
Oh, I see. When did she disappear?
Well, it was on the night of February 22nd. That was Washington's birthday. We went out to the Plantation Inn in Culver City. We were going to celebrate.
Are you flirting with that girl?
Eh? What girl?
Now, don't be evasive. You know what girl. That blonde hussy across the floor.
Why, no. She's a patient of mine.
Oh, a patient of yours. Well, that's a likely story. It isn't enough that you try to carry on affairs with all my friends, but you've got to try to flirt with every pretty face you see in a nightclub.
You're being unreasonable.
Is it unreasonable to ask that you pay attention to your own wife and stop making a fool of yourself?
I'm not making a fool of myself, I tell you. The woman is a patient of mine.
If you tell me that lie again, I'm going to slap your face.
Well, it's the truth.
Come on, take me out of here.
Gladly.
Oh, I was never so humiliated in my life.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the Biltmore.
But aren't you going home?
No, I'm not going home. I couldn't stand to look at that face of yours another minute.
So I drove her downtown. I tried to pacify her as well as I could, and after a while, she seemed to sort of cool down. I parked the car and we went in the hotel where we met some friends of ours.
Uh-huh. Did you go home after that?
No. And pretty soon I noticed my wife had disappeared. I started looking for her, and just as I got to the side door of the hotel, I saw her get into a taxi with an older man.
Did you recognize him?
Well, I suspect very strongly that it was her father. He's been trying to get Grace under his wing so he would have control of her money.
Has she got considerable money?
Yes. She inherited a great deal from her husband, who died several years ago.
You say you have letters from your wife?
Yes. She wrote me a short note a couple of days after she left. It was postmarked here in Los Angeles. She said she was going to visit her friend in the East, and she thought a short separation would do us both good.
Is this the only letter you have received?
Well, about a week after that, I got a letter from her saying she was in Denver and was on her way to New York. That was about the middle of March, I guess. I got several other letters, and then suddenly she stopped writing. That was about 3 weeks ago. Here are the letters.
Uh-huh. And are you sure these letters are in your wife's handwriting?
Yes, I'm certain of it.
Well, I see nothing particular to worry about yet. The only thing I can advise is for you to do your best to locate her. Of course, you understand the homicide squad has no interest in family squabbles unless a murder has been committed.
You think she may be dead?
Well, judging from what you tell me, I imagine she's all right. But if you don't hear from her pretty soon, let me know.
I'll sue Lunt. I'll sue the old man for every penny he has in the world. I'll sue him for slander. I'll sue him for alienating my wife's affection. I'll teach him.
No. You better take it easy, Doctor. You go on home and cool off. Let me know if you hear from your wife.
All right, Captain. I'm sorry I lost my temper, but this has got me worried to death. You won't say anything to the papers about this, will you?
Why, no, not if you don't want me to.
Well, I would appreciate it. Good day, Captain.
In the next few days, Captain Bean made discreet inquiries about Dr. Young. He learned that he was a successful dentist, well-liked in his profession, and apparently financially successful. Almost a week passed. Then Captain Bean received another visitor.
Oh. Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you?
I'm Frank Lunt. My daughter's been missing for more than 2 months. I haven't heard a word from her. I think she's been murdered.
What makes you think so?
She was married for her money. Now I think she's been killed for it.
Just who did your daughter marry?
Dr. Thomas Young.
Oh, I see. Go on.
He's a queer-looking duck, but I must admit that he has quite a reputation. Seems to be a very capable man.
Mr. Lunt, I don't think your daughter's dead.
Oh, why not?
But Dr. Young has been getting letters from his wife since she disappeared.
I don't believe it.
No? Now, here's a package of letters Dr. Young left with me.
He's been to see you?
Yes, he seemed quite worried about his wife's disappearance.
May I see those letters?
Certainly. Is that your daughter's handwriting?
Yes, it is.
Apparently, your daughter has just neglected to write to you.
You say Dr. Young has been here to see you?
Yes, he left those letters. Asked me to help find his wife.
What did he say?
He thinks you know where she is, and you're trying to cause a separation.
Well, I do want to separate them, but I haven't done it this time.
Well, of course, you know the homicide squad is not interested in family quarrels.
Uh-huh, but this isn't just a family quarrel, Captain. When you find my daughter, you'll find her dead.
Well, Mr. Lunt, I hope you're wrong, and I believe you are.
I've hired detectives to look for my daughter, Captain. And I understand her husband has done the same. But I don't want you to miss any opportunity that might help bring her back to me.
Captain Bean was now in a quandary. He began a quiet investigation of both Dr. Young and the missing woman's father. 3 weeks passed. Then a man swallowed a tooth and died. That incident in itself was a little account, but it was important in focusing the attention of the authorities upon the mysterious disappearance of Grace Young. For the man who swallowed the tooth was a former deputy city attorney of Los Angeles. And the man who pulled the tooth was Dr. Thomas Young. Routine investigation of the case found that Dr. Young was not negligent, but in the mind of Captain Jimmy Bean, there was another thought. He sent for Deputy District Attorney Harold L. Davis.
Go to see me, Jimmy?
Oh, yes, Hal. Sit down.
What's on your mind?
You've been investigating Elmer Mallett's death, haven't you? And this dentist, Dr. Young.
Yeah. Why?
Well, I've been doing a little investigating of Dr. Young myself and his father-in-law, Frank Lunt.
How come?
About 3 weeks ago, they both came to me with a story about Young's wife having disappeared. So far, I've found out that there's been a bitter antagonism between the doctor and his father-in-law for the past 4 years. That was the time the doctor married Lunt's daughter.
Wasn't she a Mrs. Brogan?
Uh-huh, that's the woman. I found out something else. She has a 17-year-old son who seems deeply attached to his stepfather. But it's the boy, not the mother, who inherits the Brogan millions. She's only the administratrix for the estate.
I see. What else?
Mrs. Young is immensely wealthy in her own right. And about a year ago, she drew up a will leaving her property to her two brothers, a nephew and her husband, share and share alike. Now, there's nothing unusual in that.
Uh-huh.
The husband gets one-fourth of the estate, and the father doesn't get any. But he has plenty anyway.
What's all this leading up to?
Well, there isn't a reason in the world to believe that this woman has been murdered except her unexplained absence. Both Dr. Young and her father are firmly convinced that the other one knows where she is. Here are some letters that she has written to her husband since her disappearance.
How long ago was this?
The night of February 22nd.
Well, maybe she didn't write these letters.
Oh, yes, she did. I've already looked into that. She has a checking account of several thousand dollars, but it hasn't been touched since the night of her disappearance. I got a sample of her handwriting from the bank, and I've had it compared with these letters. There's no doubt in the world that Mrs. Young wrote these letters.
Well, then it ought to be obvious that she's still alive. Or at least she was on the date this last letter was written.
Well, it's up to you boys from now on if you want to do anything about it. There's no reason for my department to start running around looking for a murder and end up finding the whole thing is just a family quarrel.
Well, I'll talk to the district attorney about it and see what he thinks about the proposition.
The district attorney's assistant, Davis, attacked the case from a new angle. Acting upon orders from his immediate chief, Deputy District Attorney Buren Fitz, young Davis went to the home.
Yeah, sir?
Is Mrs. Young home?
No, sir. She ain't been here since Washington's birthday, sir.
Is Dr. Young home?
No, sir. There ain't nobody here. Just me and the Filipino boy, that's all.
I'm from the district attorney's office. I want to ask you a few questions.
Yeah, sir. Y'all come inside.
Thank you.
Y'all just sit down there and make yourself at home, sir.
You say you haven't seen Mrs. Young since the 22nd of February?
Yeah, sir. If that's Washington's birthday, that's right.
How do you happen to remember the day?
Well, you see, that's the day Dr. Young, he called me up, and he say I don't have to come to work, so I done took my gal to a show.
You know if Mrs. Young took any bags or trunks or any of her clothing with her?
I don't know, boss. I knows there was a pretty gal come here after Mrs. Young done gone away, and she says she come to get some of Mrs. Young's pretty dresses. She took away a big armful, too.
Well, how'd you happen to let her have them?
Well, she done say Dr. Young say it was all right, so...
What'd this girl look like?
Well, I don't know, except she was an awful pretty gal.
Well, was she blonde or brunette?
Well, I don't know. She had dark hair and blue eyes.
Was she short or tall or...
Well, she just about medium.
Have you ever seen this woman before?
No, sir, I ain't never seen her before.
Have you seen her since?
Yes, sir. She been here lots of times since then.
Has Dr. Young ever been here when she was?
Well, no, sir. I ain't never seen him.
All right. You just forget I was here, will you?
Yes, sir. Is anything wrong, sir?
Oh, no, no. I don't think so. I'd just rather you didn't mention I've been around.
Scenting an illicit romance, Davis pondered the question of the mysterious woman who had taken the missing wife's clothing with the doctor's consent. Reasoning that the man would not permit the clothing to be worn unless he knew his wife was not coming back, Davis decided to question the dentist.
Good afternoon, sir.
Is Dr. Young in?
Yes, sir, but he's terribly busy now.
Bring him in here, please. I want to talk to him.
Yes, sir.
Did you wish to see me?
Yes, by yourself.
That'll be all, Miss Lyon.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Young, I'm Harold Davis at the district attorney's office. We're conducting a search for Mrs. Young.
That's fine. I'm glad you are. I've had private detectives looking for her for weeks now. Have you any idea where she might be?
No, have you?
No, sir, I haven't.
What I want to know, Dr. Young, is who took Mrs. Young's clothing from your home shortly after she left.
Clothing? I didn't know there was any missing. Where did you learn that?
Just let that pass for the time being. Have you any idea who took the clothing?
Possibly. My wife had a friend call for it.
Possibly. Dr. Young, how did your wife happen to leave you? Do you mind telling me?
Why, no. You see, my wife was always influenced by her people. I feel certain that old man Lunt, her father, knows where she is. I half suspect my wife is being held against her will. And I think you, officer, should make him tell what he knows about her disappearance.
Well, perhaps you're right. By the way, have you any idea who might be supplying your wife with money in case she needs it? I understand she didn't have any with her when she left.
Oh, yes, she did. She had $100,000 in Liberty Bonds.
What? $100,000?
Yes.
Where'd she get them?
I gave them to her.
You gave your wife $100,000 in Liberty Bonds?
Yes, sir. And there's the receipt she signed when I gave them to her.
You mean you got her to sign a receipt for them?
Yes, sir. I gave them to her the night she left. And I got her to sign a receipt because I didn't want any of her relatives to accuse me of stealing them.
You mind if I take this receipt and have it compared with her handwriting?
Not at all, providing I get it back.
You'll get it back.
Will you excuse me just a minute, Mr. Davis? I have a patient in the chair.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
No, not at all. Give me Trinity 2141. Eddie King, please. Hello, Eddie. Look, Eddie, I'm down Dr. Young's office. I have a sneaking hunch that his secretary will bear watching. Grab a car and get down here to 847 South Broadway and watch for a dark-haired, blue-eyed girl about 5.5 feet tall. Yeah. She'll be dressed in a pale blue dress. You keep your eyes on her, will you?
Well, Mr. Davis, that's taken care of. Patient's gone now. Is there anything else I can do for you?
No, I think not. I may call on you for some more information later on.
Davis returned to his office, where for an hour he waited for a telephone message. Then, together with Investigator King, he drove to the home of Frank Lunt, father of the missing woman.
See, I had the handwriting on that receipt compared by J. Clark Sellers.
Mm-hmm.
He says the same handwriting as that on the letters Young received and on Mrs. Young's signature card at the bank.
Well, that definitely clears Young, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Young's in the clear.
You think the woman's dead?
I don't know. We'd like to see Mr. Lunt, please.
Yes, sir. Won't you come in?
This place seems like a morgue.
Yeah. I'm beginning to wonder if it is.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You want to see me?
Mr. Lunt, I'm Hal Davis from the district attorney's office. This is Mr. King.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
We're conducting a quiet search for your daughter.
And I'm glad of that.
You mind if we ask you some very pointed questions?
Not at all.
Well, Dr. Young thinks he saw you get into a taxi cab with his wife the night she disappeared. Did you?
Absolutely not.
You knew, of course, that your daughter had $100,000 in Liberty Bonds when she disappeared.
Had what?
$100,000 in Liberty Bonds.
Ridiculous. Where would Grace get $100,000 in Liberty Bonds? Why, she wouldn't be so foolish.
Dr. Young gave her the bonds the night she disappeared.
Why, you're joking. That two-bit dentist couldn't raise $2,000, let alone $100,000?
I'm afraid you're wrong, Mr. Lunt.
Well, possibly. He wouldn't give it to her if he did have it.
On the contrary, your daughter gave her husband a receipt for the bond she took with her on that night.
Where is it?
Right here.
Let me see it.
Is that your daughter's handwriting?
Yes, I'm afraid that it is.
Well, have you any ideas about this, Mr. Lunt?
No. Grace had Liberty Bonds of her own, considerably more than $100,000. I don't have any idea where she keeps them. But that dentist, he never did have and never will have that much money invested in anything.
Just what do you think has become of your daughter, Mr. Lunt?
I came to the conclusion long ago that Dr. Young killed her after they left the plantation in that night.
Why did he kill her? What possible motive could he have?
Oh, I don't know. According to Grace's will, he gets only a small portion of her estate. I can't believe he'd kill her for that.
Neither do we, Mr. Lunt. Well, if you hear from your daughter, will you get in touch with us?
Yes, the minute I hear anything, I'll let you know.
Davis went straight to the district attorney and laid the facts before him.
All right, Davis. If you think you can solve this case, we will break the story. But if you think you can't solve it, we'd better keep it quiet till we get more evidence.
Well, it might be wishful thinking on my part, but I still think we can solve the case. But I'll need every man you can spare because it's going to take some hard work.
You can have as many men as you need.
All right, I'd like to have Eddie King keep the doctor and his secretary in sight.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to have another man keep track of the Lunts, especially the father. And I'd like to have somebody pick up the trail of Dr. Young at the Plantation Inn. That's about all we can do for the time being.
Next morning, Los Angeles newspapers screamed the sensational story of the missing heiress. Investigators learned that Dr. Young was extremely methodical in his habits, that he was not involved in any love affairs, that he was devoted to his wife. Then an important clue was uncovered by Investigator King.
This'll knock your hat off, Chief.
Yeah?
That girl in Dr. Young's office has been seen at the gay spots around town wearing Mrs. Young's sable coat and her diamonds.
Has Dr. Young been stepping with her?
As a matter of fact, she hasn't been seen much with Young. She keeps pretty much to herself. But the point is, she's been wearing Mrs. Young's clothing.
Bring that girl in.
Davis raced with the flying squadron to make another check of Mrs. Young's expensive wardrobe at her home. His discoveries convinced him he was following a warm trail.
Numerous items of apparel, expensive coats, fragile garments, and priceless jewelry were now found in Mrs. Young's bedroom, all articles that had been missing when investigators had checked before. Neither the chef nor the Filipino houseboy could explain the mysterious reappearance of the clothing and jewelry. Within an hour, Mrs. Young's father had identified the returned property as that of his daughter.
Police department, please. Homicide detail. Captain Bean, this is Hal Davis. Will you pick up Dr. Young and bring him to my office right away? Thanks.
Come in, Eddie. What'd you find out?
Well, the girl's not there, Al. Had another girl in the building inquire for her. Dr. Young said it, the Lion Girl gone down to the beach.
Oh, I was afraid of that. Well, I've got Mrs. Young's boy in the next room. I'm going to talk to him again. You can take care of that other job now.
Yeah, okay.
Hello, Pat.
Oh, hello, Mr. Davis.
Say, Pat, did Dr. Young ever suggest that you make out a will?
Well, yes. Why?
You're the heir to your father's fortune, aren't you?
Well, sure.
Did Dr. Young suggest that you make him your beneficiary?
Well, sure. He thought it would be a good idea, and so did I. What's wrong with that?
Why, nothing at all, son. Well, that'll be all. Good night.
Well, good night, Mr. Davis. But say, if you think Dr. Young killed my mother, you're all wrong. Mom's all right, I know.
Good night, son. Come in.
Here's Dr. Young, Hal.
Come in, Jim. Sit down, Dr. Young.
Well, Mr. Davis, have you found any trace of my wife?
No, we haven't, Doctor. Dr. Young, are you in love with your secretary?
That's a mighty foolish question to ask.
Why has she been wearing your wife's clothing?
She borrowed Mrs. Young's clothing in order to make an impression on her boyfriend. She borrowed Mrs. Young's diamond to make him jealous. I loaned my wife's clothing and ring to Miss Lyon, and I returned them to my home when she was through with them.
Like hell you did. No man lends his wife's clothing and jewelry unless he's positive he'll never see his wife again.
Oh, that's absurd.
Or unless he's positive she's dead.
Mr. Davis, you're trying to upset me.
I'm trying to find out the truth. What is it, Eddie?
Well, here's something that looks awfully interesting, Chief.
Yes, it does.
What is it?
$100,000 in Liberty bonds.
That I found in Dr. Young's office a few minutes ago.
Those bonds, in case you're interested, belong to John Leonard, the father of my deceased first wife.
Dr. Young, I believe you're lying. I think those bonds belong to Grace Young.
Sorry you don't believe me. I had nothing whatever to do with my wife's money.
Yeah. That's why you killed her. You wanted that money.
No, that's a lie.
Here's something the doctor might explain, Hal. While I was waiting for him to get ready to come here this afternoon with me, I noticed his secretary writing some letters. The notepaper, you will notice, is the same as the paper on which Mrs. Young's letters to the doctor were written.
You forgot that Mr. Sellers has already stated that Mrs. Young wrote those letters.
Yes? All right, send them in.
Mr. Davis?
Please. Yes? What can I do for you?
We saw a story in the paper that you was investigating the Young case. Oh, why, hello, Dr. Young. I didn't see you.
You know this man?
Oh, why, sure. That's what me and my partner come up to see you about. You see, about 4 or 5 months ago, me and my partner here and me, we dug a cistern out on his place in Beverly Glen. We dug a cistern about 10 feet deep. I guess it must have been about 8 or 9 feet in width. Bill, wasn't it 8 feet? Don't you think it was...
Never mind. What's the rest of the story?
When we saw the story in the paper about Mrs. Young, we thought my partner and I, Bill here, we thought that it was just possible that, she'd stumbled into the pit and accidentally been killed.
Accidentally?
Yes, sir. You see, that cistern was left open at Dr. Young's request. He told us we was not to finish the job on account of, he had some kind of a filtering system he was going to put in the bottom of the cistern, you see.
That hole has been covered up.
Oh.
Pat and I went up there one Sunday and put in the cement floor and covered the cistern with boards. I'm positive Mrs. Young didn't fall into the open pit.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I just thought maybe so it wouldn't hurt to mention it, you know. She could have stumbled in, yes.
Or she could have been pushed in and buried alive.
No. She was dead. She was...
Yes, Doctor? You were going to say something else?
No. Nothing.
Mr. Ramsey, what are you doing tomorrow, you and your partner?
Wait. Nothing, I guess, Mr. Davis.
Well, tomorrow I want you to dig up the bottom of that cistern.
No. Don't dig it up. I killed her. I'll tell you about it. She was mean to me. She was always shooting off her mouth. I stopped that voice of hers. For years, that voice has been driving me crazy. I stopped it.
In just a moment, Mr. Buren Fitz will give us additional facts regarding our program. The case of the missing automobile baffled everyone for a time until its owner went to the spot where he had last seen it, and there he found, pinned on the garage door, a note that read,
"Dear boss, I did my best, tried to do the right thing, but I guess I was getting old. I couldn't take it anymore. Now that it's all over, you might as well know the truth. That excuse for a motor oil you used to give me was what brought on my last illness. Honest, boss, I wouldn't give that so-called lubricant to a lawnmower. Still, you fed it to me. My health broke down. I'm gone, and I hope you're satisfied. I also hope you treat your next car better than you treated me. Signed, your broken-down Otto."
An automotive fable? Yes, friends, but it carries this moral. If you want your car to serve you well and long to the maximum of its ability, do your share. Protect the inner automobile with Real Lube. Safeguard its every revolution with this, the longer life lubricant that inoculates your motor against the ravages of needless wear. Don't kill your car with the overwork that accompanies under-lubrication. Make your next refill a crankcase full of Real Lube, the newest and finest motor oil sold in the West. And now, Mr. Fitz.
Dr. Young was brought to trial, where he heard numerous witnesses blast to pieces the cunning framework of a perfect crime. He told how he had plied his wife with drinks the night of the crime, had tricked her into writing the letters to him, how she had signed them, and how he had sent the letters to a friend to be mailed to him at regular intervals. He heard his alibi in connection with the bonds denounced as false. He heard his secretary testify that she had missed the stationery and envelopes from her box the day following his wife's disappearance. The girl's testimony seemed to break his heart. When court reconvened the last day of the trial, Dr. Young did not appear. During the night, he had fashioned a noose from a radio antenna in his jail cell and had hanged himself. His was an almost perfect crime, but it failed to pay.
Thank you, Mr. Fitz.
Los Angeles police calling all cars, attention all cars, a cancellation of broadcast 243 regarding a missing person. Suspects in this case committed suicide. That's all. Rosenquist.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.